Let's go ahead and get back into our study of the scripture. We are in the middle of the story of the dedication of the temple, or the tabernacle, I should say. And we've gotten through the first 8 days. It all started on the first day of the first Jewish month of the second year of the Exodus. And there were 7 days that were being set aside to prep everything for the dedication of the temple and for the ordination of the priests. On that 8th day came the climax where God burns the fire of his presence upon the sacrificial altar. And from now on, that fire is to be used with everything. And he also makes his presence appear at the tabernacle building. And that's where it will remain, except for those times where he wants them to move the encampment. So he'll pull up the cloud and move it forward, and they'll all follow along. Now, unfortunately, this 8th day was a day of tragedy because of the sin of Nadab and Abihu. We have suggested, and I think appropriately so, that they might have been drunk on this day, and therefore they offered unauthorized fire and unauthorized incense, and so God executed them. So it was a really tough day for High Priest Aaron and his 2 surviving sons, and actually the extended family that would include Moses and Miriam and the husband of Miriam. All of them would have wanted to grieve. Aaron, though, was not allowed to leave the compound and be a participant in the funeral. He had to maintain his leadership as the high priest. Now, he did fast that day. He did not eat his portion of the sacrificial meal that was part of the fellowship of that day. And Moses seems to have been fine with that because it was a minor thing that he could do to show his sorrow that his own sons had rebelled against God and therefore got themselves killed. So we move forward from that really rough but also very important highlight of the dedication of the tabernacle and the priesthood and see how it wraps up with the other tribes that had not yet given their special tribal gift. And we're not going to read the gifts anymore because it's the exact same gift every single time. I just want to make sure that we see and hear the names of the different tribes and the tribal leadership. So let's look at Numbers chapter 7, verse 60, which reports on the 9th day. That's the 9th day of the first month. Abidan, the son of Gideoni, the chief of the people of Benjamin, came and he gave that tribal gift. Then you get down a few verses to number 66. On the 10th day, Abinezer, the son of Amishaddai, the chief of the people of Dan, gave that tribal gift. And then down in verse 72, on the 11th day, Pagiel, the son of Okran, the chief of the people of Asher, gave that tribal gift. And then finally, we come to verse 78. On the 12th day, Ahira, the son of Enan, the chief of the people of Naphtali. So by that day, all 12 tribes have given their special gifts, which is effectively equipment for the tabernacle. They give some big plates and bowls and some small bowls with agricultural sacrifices and incense offerings. The plates and the bowls, the containers, end up belonging to the tabernacle's use from here on out. These things are brought with animals that are to be sacrificed. And so that is probably part of the daily dedication ceremony, the public dedication ceremony. But during those 12 days, each tribe, each pair of tribes that are listed here, gave one wagon with 2 bullocks to draw it, And so you've got 6 wagons in total, 12 bullocks that are going to be used as transport devices to move the tabernacle equipment, once it's broken down, from one point to the other. The Ark of the Covenant and anything with a pole, that's going to be carried on the shoulders of certain Levitical leaders. But everything else gets packed into these 6 trailer, or not trailers, but these 6 wagons, and moved to the next site. So that kind of wraps up the dedication. The 13th day of the first month, nothing is planned for that day. Nothing is happening on that day. But on the 14th, we arrive at the anniversary of the departure from Egypt, because that's the day on which the Passover lambs were slain 1 year earlier. And so we move over to Numbers chapter 9, and we read about the first Passover celebration after the departure from Egypt. So this is the first anniversary and the second Passover of the Israelites, and it's all happening at Sinai. Chapter 9 of Numbers, verse 1. He who is spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the first month, on the second year after they'd come out of the land of Egypt. He says, let the people of Israel keep the Passover at its appointed time. On the 14th day of this month at twilight, you shall keep it at its appointed time. According to all its statutes and all its rules, you shall keep it. So the 14th day of the first Jewish month in this second Passover year, I assign a date of Tuesday, the 2nd of May, 1455 BC. And they are going to take the animals that were set aside on the 10th, and they're going to butcher them before the sun goes down at the end of the 14th, going into the 15th. They're going to roast those lambs according to proper procedure, and then they will eat the meat and eat the unleavened bread and the bitter herbs and all of that inside their tents as a reminder that 1 year earlier, God had passed over their blood-marked houses in Egypt and had taken away the firstborn sons of the Egyptians, those whose houses were not marked, and that this was the mechanism by which God redeemed them out of Egypt. And so every year they're supposed to remember this by keeping this festival. Verse 4. So Moses told the people of Israel that they should keep the Passover, and they kept the Passover in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at twilight, in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that he who has commanded Moses, so the people of Israel did. But then we run into a little bit of a problem. There were certain men who were unclean through touching a dead body, so that they could not keep the Passover on that day, and they came before Moses and Aaron on the day. Now, in a large group, such as these Israelis are, we're talking about well over 600,000 named men. So several millions of people total, sounds like. There's bound to be deaths every single day, people getting old. And these guys in particular say, we can't have Passover today because we're ceremonially unclean because we touched dead bodies in the process of burying them. And so this is how they express it. Verse 7, these men said to him, we are unclean through touching a dead body. Why are we kept from bringing he who is his offering at its appointed time among the people of Israel? So they're rather upset. They're like, we can't participate in this very important commemoration because we are ceremonially unclean through no fault of our own. We buried a relative. We buried a friend. And now we can't eat the Passover. That doesn't seem to be all that fair. Verse 8. Moses said to them, wait, that I may hear what he who is will command concerning you. And then he who is spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel, saying, If any one of you or of your descendants is unclean through touching a dead body or is on a long journey, he can still keep the Passover of he who is in the second month on the 14th day at twilight. They shall keep it. They shall eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. They shall leave none of it until the morning, nor break any of its bones. According to all the statute for the Passover, they shall keep it. So God gives to Moses to give to the people a makeup day for Passover. And it's going to be 1 month later. That'll give everybody a chance that is unclean on this particular day in the first month to get past that uncleanness and then get ready and to avoid anything that might make them unclean for the second opportunity. But they'll be able to avoid all that so that they can observe the Passover in a way that will make them happy, make them glad that they're part of this group. And probably every year, there were a bunch of people that had to keep the second Passover in the second month. Now, all the rules seem to apply. They apparently set aside the lamb on the 10th day of the second month. They butcher it and start cooking it at the end of the 14th day of that second month. They roast it whole. They bake some unleavened bread. They have some bitter herbs. They eat it in one sitting. There's no leftovers authorized. Everything that's left when you're done with a meal is burned up. And this is everything exactly like the first month Passover. It's just the makeup day. Now, God is already anticipating that some people may prefer to go ahead and do it in that second month and skip the first month just of their own free will, just because they don't want to do it in the first month. And so God steps in and takes care of that problem. Verse 13, if anyone who is clean and is not on a journey fails to keep the Passover, meaning in the first month, that person shall be cut off from his people because he didn't bring he who is his offering at its appointed time. That man shall bear his sin. So God says, unless you have a very good excuse on the 14th day of the first month for not keeping the Passover, don't be skipping it. In fact, we see this very serious line of a person who does that is to be cut off from his people. And we've talked about kind of the three levels of that. One of them is to basically be excommunicated or disciplined. You're kicked out for a bit until you'll repent. Another is to be totally sent away. You are no longer an Israeli. You have to depart and live elsewhere. That's a pretty extreme reaction, but it's because of some bad attitude. And then the ultimate one is execution, death penalty. That permanently cuts you off from the people. So God takes this pretty serious that they are supposed to commemorate the Exodus, the Passover, on the first month, 14th day of that month, unless they're traveling out of the country or they are in some way ceremonially unclean on that night. And then and only then can they substitute with the second month, 14th day. Now, a little extra that we've kind of seen this before. Verse 14, if a stranger sojourns among you, so this is a non-Israeli, somebody who is not ethnically from one of the 12 tribes, and he's living in the land of Israel, because these are anticipating being in the land, and would keep the Passover to he who is, meaning he wants to kind of be Jewish. He's thinking about joining the Jewish faith. And so he wants to observe the Passover meal. Well, according to the statute of the Passover and according to its rules, so shall he do. You shall have one statute both for the sojourner and for the native. So yes, a non-Israeli can participate in the Passover if he's serious about it. All the same rules apply as they would to an ethnic Israeli. because, well, if you're going to participate in a religious ceremony, you need to be committed to the seriousness of that religious ceremony. I'm going to offer you my opinion on this is that non-Christians really have no business taking communion at church. That's a serious meal intended for believers. That being said, we do not need to bar anyone from that if they indicate they're serious about it, that they really do believe that Jesus died for their sins and rose again for their justification. If they understand what the purpose of the communion is and they wish to participate, that's fine. And so I think this is the same attitude that we're seeing here in the book of Numbers at this juncture. All right, so the next thing that would have happened is that they would have had the 7 days of unleavened bread. That's the 15th through the 22nd. And then you've got about a week left in the first month. And the second month is then cited in the beginning of the book of Numbers. And we've already read a little bit out of the book of Numbers, and we finished the book of Exodus. So now we're working in the book of Numbers, in the book of Leviticus, and a little bit in the book we're going to be in Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy. We're going to be mixing a lot of things together over the rest of the time that we're talking here. So Numbers chapter 1, let's set the chronology. Chapter 1, verse 1, He who is spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tent of meeting on the first day of the second month in the second year after they came out of the land of Egypt. So let's put a date to that. That's basically a Friday, the 19th of May, 1455 B.C., so we're getting ready to go into the Sabbath day, and so here is instructions for how things should proceed once the Sabbath is over and we've got a new week starting with this new month. He says to them, take a census of all the congregation of the people of Israel by clans. So going to take a count. It's a head count. It's going to be indicating everybody's relationship within their tribe. So it's not just which tribe do you belong to, it's which tribe, who's the clan, particular group that you're part of, and who's the head of your family's larger, or who's the head of your particular family's group. So kind of like who's the grandpa of these several different families. According to the number of names, every male head by head. From 20 years old and upward, all Israel who are able to go to war, you and Aaron shall list them company by company. So part of this is going to be to have an enrollment of militia, the people who could fight and will fight, when they go into the promised land, and also who is going to inherit a family farm once they get into the land. So you're going to have all of the men. You see here an indication of what majority age is considered amongst the Israelis, 20 years old and upward. Some of these may still be single, but probably not for long. Most men in Israel married. So from 20 years old and upward, this is pretty much all of the husbands who are married and raising families, or having already raised families if they're older. Now, verse number 4, there shall be with you a man from each tribe, each man being the head of the house of his fathers. So Moses is going to be doing the census, but he needs assistance from the leadership of each of the tribes to make sure everyone gets counted and gets counted appropriately. And so the head of each tribe is going to be the best person for doing that. So some of these names, well, all these names, we've already met because they're the ones that brought the tribal contribution for the dedication of the tabernacle. And so here are the lists. Verse 5. From Reuben, Eleazar the son of Shedeur. From Simeon, Shelemiel the son of Zerushaddai. From Judah, Nashon, the son of Amminadab. And that's the direct ancestor of King David, and therefore also of Jesus. And you'll see him in the two genealogical lists in the New Testament. From Issachar, Nethanel, the son of Zuar. From Zebulun, Eliab, the son of Helon. From the sons of Joseph, from Ephraim, Elishama, the son of Minyud. From Manasseh, Gamaliel, the son of Padazur. From Benjamin, Abadan, the son of Gideoni. From Dan, Ahiezer, the son of Amishaddai. From Ashur, Pagiel, the son of Okran. From Gad, Elisaph, the son of Duel. And from Naphtali, Ahira, the son of Enan. These were the ones chosen from the congregation, the chiefs of their ancestral tribes, the heads of the clans of Israel. So these guys are making sure everybody gets counted. Verse 17, Moses and Aaron took these men who had been named, and on the first day of the second month, they assembled the whole congregation together, who registered themselves by clans, by fathers' houses, according to the number of names from 20 years old and upward, head by head. As he who is commanded Moses, so he listed them in the wilderness of Sinai. So I'm going to correct myself here. I was thinking that this was a big project. I'd forgotten about this particular designation in verse 18. They seem to be able to get this thing done in a singular day. Or at least they started it on the very first day of the second month. So they're going to count everybody, all the men, 20 years of age and upward, who are able to go to war. In Reuben, verse 21, they listed of the tribe of Reuben 46,500 of the people of Simeon. And we're going to skip all the extra wording here. Verse 23, 59,300 of the people of Gad. Verse number 25, 46,650. Of the people of Judah, 74,600. Those listed of the tribe of Issachar, verse 29, 54,400. Verse 30, Zebulun, verse 31, 57,400. Then the tribe of Ephraim in verse 32. Verse 33 says there were 40,500. Manasseh, verse 35, 32,200. Tribe of Benjamin, 35,400. Tribe of Dan, verse 38, 62,700. Tribe of Asher, 41,500. Tribe of Naphtali, verse 43, 53,400. Verse 44, these are those who were listed, whom Moses and Aaron listed with the help of the chiefs of Israel, 12 men, each representing his father's house. So all those listed of the people of Israel by their father's houses from 20 years old and upward, every man able to go to war, all those listed were 603,550. So that's a pretty big bunch of guys. And then their wives, their kids, the grandparents, all of that is going to probably make the Israeli population somewhere in the several thousands, or several millions, excuse me, on this journey. Verse 47, though, notes this, but the Levites were not listed among them by their ancestral tribe. We'll get to the Levites later. For he who is spoke to Moses, saying, only the tribe of Levi you shall not list. you shall not take a census of them among the people of Israel, but appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony and over all its furnishings, etc., etc. We're going to come back to this on next Monday. So effectively, the population census here is to find out how many non-Levites there are, and then later make sure there's enough of these Levites to represent the full complement of the Israeli nation. Have a great weekend. I'll see you next Monday.